Welcome to Innovation Hub. I'm Kara Miller. Make demands up front. Always lowball. Kill them with kindness. We've all heard different tricks and tools for negotiating to get what we want. But there might be things that you can't see holding you back. Margaret Ann Neal has looked at the art of negotiating in a new economy. She's a professor at Stanford Business School. Margaret, thanks for joining me.
Well, thanks for having me.
You've done research on negotiation for years. What have you learned about the way that we think that most people don't even realize about themselves?
There are actually two things that are almost mutually exclusive. One is there are so many opportunities for negotiating that people don't even see. And the reason they don't see it is because they often see negotiation only as a battle. So they first contemplate negotiation, and they're already putting on the battle armor, and they're getting ready for a fight. And the characteristic of that fight is, I'm going to try to keep you from getting stuff I want, and I'm going to try to get stuff from you you don't want to give me.
Right.
And as soon as they have that perspective in mind, they are ripe for a fight. But for the most part, the opportunities to negotiate that exist for most of us are with people with whom we have ongoing relationships or have the potential for a relationship. And so a lot of us are hesitant to negotiate because we're concerned about having that kind of negative view
right.
of the relationship. And so we say, you know what, it's probably better not to do that. But one of the things that I find really useful is if you can reframe your view of negotiation from this sort of adversarial, put on the battle armor, get ready for a fight, to one of collaborative problem solving.
So you sit down, periodically, a lot of us do these negotiations. You're sitting across from your boss in a room somewhere. Are there little things, whether it's things with our body or things with the room or whatever, little things we do that matter and we just don't realize they do?
Well, there's a lot of research going on with folks in the area of power, which talk about sort of the presence, how you come to a space or how you hold yourself and that sort of thing. And I think those are really interesting. One of the things, though, that I really focus on, and it's not a little thing, so I kind of want to push back a little bit on that, because what happens is people will oftentimes walk into a room for a negotiation and they are surprisingly unprepared for it. Where you really need to spend some time is really understanding what it is you want, what will make you better off, and really getting a sense for your counterpart and what will work with them. And once you have that, that you actually come to the meeting, to the room, with some proposals, that
right.
you don't just come in and sort of say, you know, I want more.
Do you think research here is increasingly going down the road of brain scans and understanding what people are doing either consciously or unconsciously when they're in the middle of a negotiation?
I think there's a lot of stuff that we've already learned about what people do consciously and non-consciously.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that people are really bad at is understanding how powerful anchors are in a negotiation. So if you ask folks, are you better off making a first offer or should you receive the first offer? And there's been a lot of research that's been done on that has, you know, virtually nothing to do with sort of fMRIs and sort of what's going on in the brain, really. But when you ask people sort of how well do you understand where you're better off, about 80% of the participants in my classes, in my executive programs, in sort of just random conversations, about 80% of folks say it is absolutely you're better off receiving the first offer. They do that because they think that the benefit is the information asymmetry, that I now have an understanding of what you want and you don't have that yet because I have not reciprocated.
See, I would have thought the opposite, because then they get to set the terms and say, like, we want to hire you for X amount of money. But what if you had in your mind you wanted to make much more money? I don't know. It seems like they get to frame the discussion.
They do get to frame the discussion. That's exactly the point. Most people think that making the first offer is bad and receiving it is good. The empirical evidence is just the opposite, that actually making the first offer on average is better because you do get to set the terms. But what we don't realize is how powerfully we are influenced by that first offer. That's one of the things that I think is really important for us to understand before we even understand what part of the brain is lighting up.
Right.
There are a lot of rules that we have, that we kind of have developed over time, that really are not supported by empirical evidence.
You know, Netflix famously said to employees a couple of years ago, Sheryl Sandberg said this was a really important thing. You know, hey, look, employees, feel free to figure out what you are worth on the open market. We don't want secrets. Do you think it's possible we're headed towards more transparency? Is that a good thing, to have more transparency, to have people know what they are worth?
I think it is. The notion of sort of the secrecy around pay, and a lot of companies, you know, there are companies for whom it is a fireable offense to talk about pay. And I've got to believe that those companies want that because there's no consistency in how they pay people.
Right.
Because one of the things that we know from research is that if you look at how people think about the raises or the salaries of people around them, people tend to overestimate what other people make. So what happens is, if there's secrecy, everybody feels bad because they think they're not doing as well as everybody else. And I think actually it should be much more transparent, because what transparency will do is it will provide some discipline for a lot of folks, both on both sides. Think about, remember when Sony got hacked?
Sure.
There was a big discussion on Facebook when Charlize Theron discovered that she was being paid $1.2 million less than her co-star.
Right, exactly.
Right, she was just appalled. How could this possibly happen? And my response was, why do you think this doesn't happen? And by the way, when the hacking result came out, she went back and got the additional $1.2 million.
So all of a sudden, she had more information.
Exactly. Go transparency.
Right. Okay, so I would like to know how this works at a company. Like, in the company that you conceive of, that is the ideal company, does this mean that you publish everybody's salaries? Does this mean you say to people, I mean, if you want to tell your coworkers your salary, that's fine. Because obviously a lot of companies say, do not talk about the salary with anybody else.
Well, I think the answer is that it can't be this big secret. And the reason it can't be this big secret is not because necessarily companies are evil, so I'm not moving down that path. But we've all drunk the same Kool-Aid. And one of the things that happens is that, you know, for example, we've got a lot of evidence that women just have lower expectations about what they're worth. Mm. And so what happens then is women often don't negotiate because, you know, the deviation between what they were expecting and what they're being offered is less because they don't have high expectations.
Right.
When we equate the expectations of what this job is worth or what you are worth, we find no difference between the proportion of women who negotiate and the proportion of men who negotiate. So the notion of having, you know, it's sort of the Charlize Theron, right? All of a sudden you realize, hey,
right,
this job is worth $1.2 million more. I am going to ask. As opposed to when she didn't have that information, she's like, okay, I'm doing pretty good.
Well, you know, you've actually talked about this idea that if you, with the gap between women and men. So if you negotiate a 5% pay raise at the beginning of your career, and men are probably more likely to do that than women, as you were saying, by the time you're ready to retire, if you're a woman, you are behind by hundreds of thousands of dollars. And you think, like, how could 5% make that big a difference? But it does.
It does. And part of my sort of soapbox is, you know, if you don't want to negotiate, that's fine, because that's a personal choice. But you need to understand the cost of not doing that. And if understanding the cost is okay with you, and you understand the cost and you say, okay, fine, I'm willing to pay that cost, then good, don't negotiate. But my concern is that people don't really do the math to figure out what this cost is. And by the way, if you get a significantly lower salary at your first job, it doesn't go away when you change companies, because you're probably going to be asked the following question. So what were you making at your last job?
Right, right.
And so it follows you.
What is it about women that they think they deserve less pay than men do for that, let's say, same first job, and they have the same qualifications? What's going on?
Yeah, I don't think they believe they deserve less pay.
Okay.
I believe that because of things like the lack of transparency, we just assess our worth as less.
Mm-hmm.
But what's also interesting is that there's another level of, or another layer of challenge that women face. You know, so let's say that you and I, that I'm negotiating for a compensation package in your company, and I'm a man, and I say, you know, I have a script, right? So I say a set of things to you, you respond back to me, and then you compare a woman saying exactly those same words. What you're going to find is the woman is going to be perceived as greedy, demanding, and not nice, even though she's saying exactly the same words. And that occurs especially when the evaluator is a male. Now, interestingly, before you think, oh, wow, great, so I just need to find a female boss.
Uh-oh. It's not that simple, apparently.
No, because it turns out that actually women penalize both males and females for negotiating. So,
well, at least that's
it's at least across the board equal or something, right? So, yeah.
So as women get into higher and higher positions then, does this change? Are they able to get more?
It turns out that as you move up in the organization, that kind of pressure to sort of be seen as you know, nice and likable, and the kind of pressure that you get, you know, sort of being to trying to be able to succeed, and the kind of glass ceiling kind of effect.
Right.
Once you get through that, actually the bias flips on you, because one of the things that some of my research colleagues have discovered is that when you get to be at the very top of organizations, people go, wow, she's made it that far. She must be really good.
Right. Do you remember a time yourself when you had to negotiate for something and you could feel yourself using your own research in the negotiation?
Absolutely. When I first started, you know, sort of as I was growing up, I grew up in the South, and it was very clear that, you know, I shouldn't be too aggressive or demanding. That was just not accepted. Mm. And so I tried to be nice and, you know, that sort of thing. And I was nice. But what I discovered, and this is sort of the joke among academics, is that we study what we're worst at. I really avoided conflict. And so then I started studying conflict and I started studying negotiation. And I suspect that most of my colleagues now would not see me as someone who avoids negotiation. But I do try to negotiate in very specific ways. And that is, I try to look at negotiation opportunities as opportunities to solve problems, particularly for my counterparts, problems my counterparts have, but with a solution that makes me better off.
Hmm.
And so I try to avoid that sense of people thinking that I'm greedy, demanding, and not nice, because it's actually really hard to think of somebody as greedy, demanding, and not nice when they're helping you solve your problems.
Right.
Margaret Ann Neal is a professor at Stanford. She's the co-author of Getting More of What You Want, How the Secrets of Economics and Psychology Can Help You Negotiate Anything in Business and in Life. Margaret, this was great. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much. I really enjoyed it.
I also asked Margaret Neal to weigh in on Reddit's controversial new policy of not negotiating salaries.
There's much less pressure on them to keep salaries at a market level. So it may be the case that over time, those salaries get depressed.
You can find out why working for Reddit may be like driving a Saturn on our website, innovationhub.org.